is found in the book of Exodus in the 3rd and 4th chapter. I left off speaking to you last Sunday about the manifestation that Moses had of God when he appeared unto him in the burning bush, and how that Moses was spoken to and told not to draw near hither, but to take off thy shoes off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. How I dwelt particularly upon this manifestation, and how that likewise Moses, he had to take his shoes off his feet. When we come up to the house of God, that we likewise should put away all vanity and all idleness and everything that would hinder us from worshiping God, and how that Moses likewise was spoken to by God, and how that God still speaks in and through the medium of his word and through his servants in his church even to this very day. And now Moses was told that God had seen the affliction that the people of Israel were undergoing in the land of Egypt, that he knew their cry and had heard it, and likewise he had seen what these taskmasters were doing to these people, and he knew their sorrows. Behold, I have seen the affliction of my people in Israel, and I am come down to deliver them. And he calls upon Moses to go unto Pharaoh and to speak unto him and to request that he would leave these people go. And we find in this that God seen these people, the Israelites. He knew what they were undergoing. He knew what these taskmasters was doing to them. And he knew the cry that had come up before him, and he knew their sorrows. Oh, the loving kindness of this God concerning these people. He calls them my people. Why did he call them that? Were they any different than any other people? No, but he had promised unto Abraham and unto Isaac and Jacob that this people would be his people, and that his seed, the seed of Abraham, would be the seed in which he would dwell, in which he would manifest his love and his favor. And we find him calling these Israelites his people. Oh, what a title, my hearers, my people. Were these people any different than the Egyptians by nature? No, they weren't. They were like creatures, all sinners in the sight of God. And every one of them were called my people. He had chosen them as a nation, and he was going to deliver these people as a nation. And he was going to bring them out and lead them to the land of Canaan. Every one of them would be subject to this deliverance. But there was amongst them likewise his elect people, those that were true Israelites indeed. And these he loved with an everlasting love. These he likewise called my people. And now he's seen what was going on with these people. Oh, my hearers, they are a type of the Church of Christ, especially those that are awakened by the Spirit of God and brought under conviction of sin and have the law brought home to them. Those who are troubled, who are crying out under the affliction of sin, of guilt, and of what they experience in themselves, who cry out to God for mercy, they are brought very low. The law condemns them, the law curses them, the law brings in its sentence against them, and because of this taskmaster, they are brought very low in crying and groaning unto God as the Israelites were down in the land of Egypt. Oh, they are so troubled with their sin. Sin is their trouble. How many people here are troubled with sin? I'm afraid that very few people are groaning and sighing and crying because of their sins. There may be several that are listening to me that say, oh, sin That monster, it has so much power. It overpowers me so often. It brings me down. I can't overcome it. I fear sometimes that I will sink down under the load and under the weight of it. Oh, I wish I never had a sin anymore, but I find it prevails. It slays me. I can't do anything to overcome it. Are you troubled with sin? Is this your burden, my hearers? Oh, I wish that this word that God spoke unto Moses concerning the children of Israel would reach your heart. I know your troubles. I know your concerns. I know your affliction. I know your sorrow. And I have heard your cry. Probably you say, I've been crying so long I don't believe God listens to me, that he hears me or that he will answer me. Oh, he hears, and he will in due time deliver, just as well as he delivered these Israelites from their bondage and from their servitude in which they were in this land of Egypt. And he calls upon Moses that Moses should come and should go unto Pharaoh, and he should tell Pharaoh that he was sent by God. The Lord God of Abraham and of Isaac has appeared unto me. And he was to demand that these people would go out for 3 days in the wilderness to worship God. And we have here then God calling upon Moses and choosing him to be his servant, to go and to speak unto Pharaoh. Now, this was a wonderful mission that God was going to send Moses upon. And Moses at one time was so willing to go, he had went himself. He had killed an Egyptian, and he had to flee for his life. And now 40 years had passed by, and here he was. God came to him now and commanded him that he should go unto the Pharaoh and demand that these people would be permitted to leave the land for 3 days to worship God in the wilderness. And God said unto him, this shall be a sign unto you, that after you have led the people out, that I will meet you here in this mountain, and here you shall worship me. God then gave Moses that assurance that he would meet with him when he led these people to this mountain. It was a sign to encourage Moses to go. But we find that Moses, he did not want to go. Where he had been so willing to go in the beginning, now when God wanted him to go, he did not want to go. He complains, and he says unto God, if I go and say that the Lord God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob has appeared unto me, if I go to the people of Israel, what shall I say to them if they say unto me, what is his name? And then God said unto him, I am that I am. This is the name that thou shalt say unto the children of Israel, I am hath appeared unto me. I am that I am. What a wonderful name, my hearers. It reveals unto us the independency of God, the self-existence of him, that he exists forever and forever, that he had no beginning, that he had no ending. I am that I am, faithful, unchangeable, the same yesterday, today, and forever. I am the same in my mercy, in my love, in my compassion. I am the same forever and ever. I am that I am. This would be his name and his memorial unto all generations. Oh, what a blessing that even to this very day, he is I am that I am. Have any of you, my hearers, experienced something of this in your life? Have you ever had anything to do with the glorious attributes of this great I am that I am? Have you found him to be true to his word? Have you found him to be faithful to you where you were unfaithful to him? Have you found him to be just and holy and righteous? Have you found him likewise to be a merciful God unto you? I am that I am. Has he promised you something? He will keep his promise. I am that I am. He keepeth his word unto 1,000 generations. Oh, what a mercy that this great and glorious and self-existent Jehovah remains the same forever and ever. For if there was ever any variableness in him and any changing in him, it would be a lost matter with every one of his people. And this glorious name then, Moses, was to tell the children of Israel of, and this would also give that these people would believe and would hearken unto him. Because he did not think that the people of Israel would believe him. He says, when I come unto them, they will say, I don't believe you. I don't believe God appeared unto you. And Moses, he knew his own heart, and he knew the people of Israel, and he knew how filled they were with unbelief. And therefore, he thought that when he came to the people, that is what they would say. But God assured him and said that they would hearken unto him. And now Moses, he still, in his obstinate name, refuses to go. My hearers, Moses is a tough guy. He had signs of God already, that God would be with him, and that God had called him, and that he should go. But he says, if I go, the people will not believe me. There may be some that are listening to me. And they have likewise have had probably an appearance of God in their life to their immortal souls. They have had something which others have not. God has met with them. God has laid sin home upon their hearts. God has given unto them a revelation of his Son as the way whereby they can be saved. And they are seeking salvation in him. But these people are like Moses. They say to themselves, I better not say anything to nobody about this because the people won't believe me. The people won't believe that God has appeared unto me. And they keep it to themselves. And God is so good that he gives sign after sign, and still they refuse to speak about what God has done unto their soul. We like people to believe us when we speak. We like people to believe that God is leading us. And when people do not believe us, then we begin to disbelieve it too. We begin to go back to God with it. And Moses, he likewise said the people will not hearken. But God overruled his objection, and he said, they will hearken. And then God said unto him, what is it in your hand? And Moses had a rod in his hand. And God said unto him, cast the rod on the ground. And when he cast this rod on the ground, it became a serpent, and Moses fled from it. And God said unto him, take it by its tail. And he went and he took it by its tail, and it became a rod again. Now, this teaches us that the devil, who is a serpent, and who is seeking to destroy everyone, is still subject to the power of God, that he cannot do what he wants to do. He is limited. That God has him, as we would say, on a chain. And he can only go so far. And now God gave unto Moses another sign. He says, put thy hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into the bosom, and when he took it out, it was leprous, white as snow. And then he commanded him to put his hand back into his bosom. And when he put it back into his bosom and took it out, it was just like his other flesh again. And God said unto him, now, if they don't believe the first sign, they'll surely believe the second sign. And if they don't believe these two signs, then he says, you take water and pour water out upon the dry land, and it shall become blood in the sight of the people, and they shall hearken unto you, and they shall believe you. How good this God was to Moses. And Moses, he felt himself insufficient to the task that God was calling him to. He had had a wonderful education in the land of Egypt. He had been instructed in all the wisdom of Egypt. And now 40 years later, God calls him to go. I think Moses said, what now? You want me to go now? After I've been away from Egypt so long? And after I've lost all my learning and all my education, now you want me to go? If you had called me when I was 40 years old, I was ready to go. But now, I bet you he said inside, I ain't going to go. He wasn't going to go. He looked up against it. He knew the people of Israel. He knew Pharaoh. And he knew what he had done in Egypt. And he feared probably that there was some yet that would even seek his life and would even take hold of him and put him in prison for what he had done 40 years before. And Moses then had many objections. He had many fears. And he looked up against this task as a mountain. He felt himself insufficient to do what God was commanding him to do. This man, Moses, he was told that God would certainly be with him. God said to him, you don't have to go alone, Moses. I don't want you to do this alone. I'll be with you. I certainly will be with you. What a mercy, my hearers, this was on the part of God to go along with Moses in this respect. Oh, Moses, he objects yet. Now, this man, Moses, is probably a type of some people that are listening to me. It may be in years gone by that God has called you to a certain office, maybe in the church, and you were voted in. And when you were voted in, you refused to accept the nomination. You refused to accept the office that you were voted into. You turned it down. You felt yourself just like Moses. Insufficient. You looked at yourself and you said, I can never do something like that. And the devil came in and he showed you all your slips and all your faults and all your iniquities. And you listen to the voice of unbelief. You listen to what the devil revealed unto you. Oh, Moses, he had very little faith and exercise concerning what God was speaking unto him about. And therefore, God met him with every objection. His objections were overruled by God. And now God came again unto Moses and told him that he should go, and that he would deliver the people, and that he would lead them into the land of Canaan, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now Moses, he still says, Lord, I'm not eloquent, I'm slow of speech, and I don't have any ability to go and talk to these people and convince them and have them listen to me. Some think that Moses had that impediment that he stuttered, and that he was not eloquent. He couldn't talk with a gifted tongue. He couldn't put over what he had in his mind. And therefore, he came to God with this, I am not eloquent, not even since thou hast spoken unto me, Lord. I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. And the Lord said unto him, who has made man's mouth? Who has made the deaf, the dumb, and the blind? Have not I the Lord? I will be with thy mouth, and I will teach thee what thou shalt say. Moses then comes with the objection that he wasn't eloquent, and that he couldn't speak well, that he was no orator. And therefore, he couldn't go. Oh, my hearers, the Lord overrules this objection too with, who has made man's mouth? And my hearers, every one of us are gifted by God with a tongue. There are many people that are dumb, they can't speak. And they likewise have the impediment of deafness, they can't hear either. What maketh you and I to differ? Have you ever seen these poor creatures? They have to use sign language to communicate what's going on in their minds to others. God says here, who has made man's mouth? Who has made the deaf, the dumb, the blind? Have not I? It's God that does this, by hearers. And now God has gifted me and you with a tongue. But oh, what must we say about this little member that we have in our mouths? How do we use this tongue? Oh, my hearers, how many use it to the dishonor of God, to the dishonor of their neighbor, and to the dishonor of themselves? Oh, what cursing, what swearing, what filthy language. Oh, what speaking against each other, what telling of lies, what giving false testimony. Oh, what an awful thing. Oh, this little tongue that we have in our mouth is. The Apostle James speaks about our tongue. He says it is but a little member, but it is put on fire from hell, he says. How true it is. If you learn to know what you are and you have a hell inside, it's a wonder if God keeps your tongue. We find the psalmist praying, keep the door of my lips, set a bridle before my mouth. Very necessary, my hearers, for you and I to pray this too. Oh, we aren't any different than all these people that we hear using such profanity and speaking to the dishonor of God and of everyone else. We have the same fire inside here, and if left to ourselves, we most certainly would do the same thing. Oh, how few use this member to the honor of God. Oh, how necessary, if we are called to an office, as Moses was called, to have God to be with our mouths and to teach us what to say. Oh, what a mercy, my hearers, if a minister is called by God and spoken to in this manner. Oh, how few ministers have this. How many run without being sent? How many speak to gain glory, to gain honor for themselves, and they are nothing else but dead ministers to the people of God? Because God has not sent them. God has not anointed them. They are not a voice to the hearts and souls of God's dear children. They never reach their case because they have no case of their own. Oh, the land is filled with those kind of men that have never been sent by God. What a mercy that there are several even in this land that have been sent by God, that are at times gifted with the anointing of His blessed Spirit, and are given to be a hand and a foot to the Church of Christ even in our midst. Oh, we should esteem these men very greatly, my hearers. Oh, what a mercy it is if God calls us even to this work, to our men, and He gives us a promise as He did to Moses, I will be with thy mouth, and I will teach thee what to say. I would entreat you, my hearers, to pray for me, that God would likewise be with my mouth, and that He would teach me what to say. Oh, how necessary, my hearers, to have God with us. For if God is not with us, why, we might just as well discontinue the Bible class. There will be no blessing, my hearers. Oh, and if God is for us, who can be against us? Let the whole world be against us if we have God on our side. And my hearers, how do you use your tongue? Has God given you to use it yet to his honor? Are you found in secret? Are you found on your knees? Are you found praying to this God in heaven above for mercy, for pardon, for peace? Are you praying to him to keep your tongue? Oh, set the watch for the door of my lips, Lord. You are using it, my hearers, to his honor. You never spoke like that before, did you? You never had such desires before. You just warbled forth what you thought. But now you're very careful. Oh, before you go out in the morning, you ask God to keep your tongue, because you know that little member can put you in so much trouble. Oh, you pray God to watch over you. You know, with that tongue, we pray to God and we curse our neighbor. The same member, we try to glorify God, and in other words, that we try to curse that creature that God has created. Oh, the Apostle James gives us a wonderful lesson about our tongue. And he gives us one statement, and I'm so convinced of that, my hearers. And he says that is something that no man can tame. And that's true. You can make a ship go the way you want to. He says it's got a rudder. It's steered by a small helm. But this little member here, there isn't anybody in the world that can tame it. Neither can you yourself. Oh, what a mercy, my hearers, if God gives us a new tongue. They shall speak as with new tongues. And all then they begin to speak to the honor and to the glory of God. What a mercy when God gives us this, my hearers, to use this member to his honor and to his glory. And God said, who has made man's mouth? Have not I? Who has made the deaf, the dumb, and the blind? Have not I? Oh, my hearers, blindness, what an awful affliction this is. Oh, yes, there are other afflictions probably that are worse than that. But blindness, what a terrible thing. You can't see nothing. And so many poor people are afflicted in this way. Even when people get older, probably you have a mother or a father, they're getting old, they get cataracts on their eyes, and pretty soon they begin to lose their sight. They don't dare be operated on, because so many people have been operated on, it hasn't helped them very much. Therefore, they fear to go. Oh, how many poor people, even when young in life, have an accident, they lose one eye, they can't see anymore. Sometimes they lose both of them. You know, it was a cruel mode of punishment in Eastern countries from kings that were tyrants. They would cut the eyes out of certain people because they had done something wrong. What an awful thing. And now, my hearers, blindness is a terrible catastrophe. But let me inform you that every one of us are spiritually blind. God said, who has made man's mouth? Who has made the deaf, the dumb, the blind? Have not I? And my hearers, every one of us are in this respect deaf, dumb, and blind spiritually. Oh, and we do not realize it. We are dead in trespasses and sins, and therefore we are in this state. And what a mercy, my hearers, if in this life you are brought as the blind man was brought to say, one thing I know, I was blind, but now I see. Can you say that? Do you see things now as you never seen them before? You see sin, you see eternity, you see a God that's just, you see likewise a wonderful Jesus who invites sinners to come to him. Oh, what a mercy, my hearers, if we get some spiritual eyesight. But then we begin to see things in an altogether different light. And Moses, he was told by God that he made these creatures. And now Moses, He was told that God would be with his mouth and that he would teach him what to say. Oh, my hearers, this man Moses, you would think, what has he now to bring in against us? You would think he would be ready to go. All his objections are overruled. Whatever he brought to God, God overruled it. And now Moses, did he go? Was he ready to go? No, he wasn't ready to go yet. No. He said, Lord, send by the hand whom you want to send, but don't send me. In other words, send somebody else, Lord. I don't want to go. I can't do this work. Oh, my hearers, justly God became angry with Moses. It's a wonder that God didn't lay him on the side, isn't it? What would you and I do if we had such a subject before us? Or would we deal with him as God did? Oh, the kindness of this God, my hearers, it proves to us if God has an intentions of making us something and causing us to do something, we're going to go. He's going to make us go, irrespective of what we think and what we have in our minds. And now Moses, he says, send somebody else. I don't want to go. And now God, he became angry. And he said unto him, is not Aaron thy brother? He speaketh well. I know this. And he cometh to meet thee. And I will give him to be your assistant. He shall be the spokesman to the people, and ye shall be his God to Aaron. And now, this man Aaron, he was Moses' brother. He was 83 years of age. He hadn't seen Moses probably all the years that Moses was living in the land of Midian. According to the commentary, Moses had taken well care of Aaron when he was home in Egypt. He had seen to it that Aaron had a good education. And Aaron was an eloquent man. He was gifted to speak eloquently. But he was far inferior to Moses in wisdom and understanding. God has special gifts that he gives to people. And now God promises to give Aaron unto Moses. And now the tongue of Aaron and the head of Moses, they would combine to go into the land of Egypt and perform this mission that God sent them on. And my hearers, what a mercy and what a blessing that Aaron not only was gifted with a tongue to speak, but he had likewise grace. He was a born-again individual. And God had sent him to meet Moses, two brothers, born again, both with the grace of God in their souls. What a mercy, my hearers. Are there two brothers here that are like that? The Lord says, I will take you, one out of a family, two out of a city, and I will bring you to Zion. Sometimes the Lord is pleased to work in families. Sometimes he takes a whole family. I've read of a book, I think there were seven in that family, and every one of them became ministers. The grace of God was glorified in all seven of them. And sometimes God passes by a whole family, nobody taken. Oh, what a mercy if one is even taken. Here we have two, Aaron and Moses, both possessing the grace of God in their souls. And now Moses, he consents to go. He's overwhelmed by the loving kindness and the grace of God. That's the only thing that overwhelmed him. And now he went to Jethro, his father-in-law, and he says, I pray thee, let me go back to my home in Egypt to see whether my brethren are still alive. And Jethro said, go in peace. He permitted him then to go. He had no objections for Moses to leave. And Moses, he takes his two sons and his wife, and he puts them on a donkey, and off he goes to the land of Egypt. And we find that God spake unto Aaron, and Aaron met him in the wilderness, He met him at the mountain of God, and he kissed him. And Moses was commanded to take the rod that he had with him, and with this rod God would do many wonders and many miracles. And when Moses and Aaron met, what a meeting that must have been, my hearers. Two brothers meeting each other after so many years. And you may be sure that Moses began to relate unto Aaron what he had experienced, how God had appeared unto him out of the burning bush, and how God had spoken unto him and assured him that he would bring these people up out of the land of Egypt from under all their misery and all their bondage, and that Moses and Aaron, they were to be the leaders of the people. Oh, they talked together about the wonderful things that God had revealed unto them. Oh, my hearers, how seldom this happens in the time in which we live, because there's so little happening. If God should commence to work in the hearts of some of you who are listening to me, how anxious you will be to meet others that have the same work going on in their souls. Oh, what union you will find with each other, what love and affection you have towards each other, and you begin to relate to each other what God has done unto your souls. Oh, my hearers, this happens so seldom today. And we believe in the communion of saints, but the poor saints in our days are experiencing so little of God's grace and so little of his favor and so little communion and manifestations of himself to their hearts that they have so little to talk about. Their tongues are mostly silent. Aaron and Moses, they met together and they talked together to the honor and to the praise of that God who had communicated something of himself to them. And now we find Moses and Aaron going up to the land of Egypt. And today's lesson begins with the 7th chapter. In that chapter we find God speaking unto Moses that he should go in unto Pharaoh, and that he should speak unto him and request him to lead the people go for 3 days into the wilderness, so that they would do sacrifice unto God. How different God begins. Moses, he began with killing an Egyptian, but mild manner, just with a request so that these people would be permitted to leave the land and to worship him in the wilderness. And now when Moses and Aaron went in, God said unto him, if he asks for a miracle, then you shall take the rod and you shall throw it down before him, and prove unto him that God has sent you. Already Moses had shown this unto the Israelites, and they had hearkened unto him, and they had believed the signs that Moses shown. For they fell down and they worshipped God, when he told them that God had appeared to him and that he was to deliver them, and then they believed him. But now we find him speaking unto Pharaoh and telling him that God had appeared unto him, and God made this request to him that he should let these people go. It does not say that Pharaoh requested a miracle to be performed, but we find that Aaron takes the rod and he casts it down on the ground, and it became a serpent. Pharaoh, he calls for all the magicians and all the wise men in Egypt, and he brings them in. And these magicians, they cast their rods down, and their rods become serpents. Some think that this was by evil spirits. Some think it was by the art of magic. Others think it was God himself that caused these rods to become serpents, so that Pharaoh would have that hardness of heart not to let the people go. And now when these magicians done in like manner, then we find that Aaron's rod ate up all the serpents of the magicians, and they had no more rods. But Aaron's serpent returned back to a rod. convincing enough unto Pharaoh that this was of God. Now all what God did had a tendency to soften the heart of Pharaoh. Every miracle that God performed in the front of him was to soften his heart and to let the people go. But none of these things softened the heart of Pharaoh. His heart remained hardened. The Lord willing, next week we will take up this subject. From this point, Pharaoh hardening his heart. That's all for today.